Hello, I'm Richard Suchet, and this is the LBC Daily Debrief. It's the end of the week. Congratulations for making it. And you're listening to the podcast that brings you the full story on the day's biggest news. And we start off here.
If you're telling me there's a horrible people, horrible racist people, I would certainly apologize if you'd like me to do that.
Yeah, that's not quite an apology, though, is it? Donald Trump sort of getting close to apologizing for retweeting the far-right group Britain First. We'll have more on that and the president's speech in Davos in just a few moments' time. And as a Labour peer is effectively sacked from the party's front bench, we'll discuss whether the President's Club dinner in London last week is turning into a witch hunt. Now, I'm sorry to do this to you, but we are talking about Donald Trump again. I hate to give him the oxygen of publicity, but he is the US president after all. Today, Trump's insisted he wasn't endorsing the far-right group Britain First when he retweeted three of their videos. Don't remember him having RT equals not endorsements on his Twitter profile. But anyway, the president says he's prepared to apologise for sharing the anti-Muslim clips last November. In an interview with ITV's Good Morning Britain, Mr. Trump said he didn't know who they were.
As I say often, I am the least racist person that anybody's going to meet. And certainly I wasn't endorsing anybody. I knew nothing about them. If you're telling me there's a horrible people, horrible racist people, I would certainly apologize if you'd like me to do that.
That's not quite apologising, is it? But anyway, the interview comes as President Trump addressed the World Economic Forum in Davos. And here to bring us more is the US political analyst Beth Gardner. Beth, firstly, talk us through this speech. What are the things that we need to know about? And then we'll talk about this interview.
Well, you know, I think it's clear to everybody who's been watching for a long time that there are different versions of Trump. Today at the speech, we saw the on-script Trump. You know, pretty polished. He didn't really diverge from the remarks. And the script that was written was, you know, I would say sort of putting a friendly polish on this nationalistic America First agenda. He said America First does not mean America alone. And he really sort of positioned himself as a salesman for his economic agenda, promoting his tax cuts, boasting about their effects so far, and trying to persuade the business leaders in attendance that his sort of, you know, very America First agenda was not at odds with their global trade sort of viewpoints. Obviously, it's a bit of an awkward fit. Trump is not a fan of all the multilateral trade deals that have become increasingly popular. And, you know, I think that that's been apparent at Davos. But certainly he kind of behaved himself, if you will, although it was definitely clear that once it switched from the scripted speech to a sort of less prepared Q&A, he couldn't restrain himself from taking a jab at Hillary Clinton and his favorite whipping boy, of course, attacking the quote, fake news.
And this interview that he's done with Piers Morgan from Good Morning Britain, I don't know how closely you've been following the retweet issue of this group Britain First.
Sure, of course, and that's obviously been of tremendous concern here in Britain. You know, as far as this Piers Morgan interview and Trump, he's prepared to apologize. It seems to me like just another episode in this sort of theater of the absurd that we've seen.
He didn't apologize.
No, he didn't apologize. And I mean, obviously, I'm not sure what it means to say you're prepared to apologize. If he wanted to apologize for this, he could have apologized months ago. More to the point, you know, I think is to go back to the original retweeting, is that this wasn't accidental. You know, I'm certainly prepared to believe that Trump may not have specifically been familiar with Britain First as an organization. But, you know, these videos, regardless of who tweeted them, were pretty hateful stuff. And they grabbed Trump in his gut because, you know, that is sort of who he is. And what's more, obviously, the, you know, somewhat breathtaking irresponsibility of a president of the United States retweeting something without knowing who it is. I mean, I don't know if you're active on Twitter.
Of course I am.
I tweet a bit. I don't have a national security apparatus that's able to vet all my tweets for me, but, you know, I do click on the person I'm about to retweet and at least see who they are before I click the retweet button. You know, so this notion of a president saying, well, I didn't know who they were, so it's okay. you know, it's pretty shocking it's, in itself. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy, isn't it? Beth Gardner, US political analyst, thanks very much for joining us here on the LBC Daily Debrief. Finally, a Labour peer has effectively been sacked from his front bench role for attending last week's controversial President's Club dinner. Lord Mendelson says he was a part of last week's event in his role as president of a charity that received support from the fundraiser, but he says he didn't witness any sexual misconduct. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn's told the LBC Daily Debrief he was shocked and appalled by the reports.
This is the 21st century. A bunch of men, most of whom seem to be pretty wealthy, go there to be entertained by young women who apparently have been very badly treated. I'm glad it's closed. I'm glad we've said goodbye to the President's Club.
Pressure is also mounting on the Conservative MP Nadeem Zahawi, who also attended the event. But are we in danger of letting this dinner turn into a political witch hunt? Here to discuss this is the editor of Spiked Online, Brendan O'Neill, and Feminist and Telegraph columnist Rebecca Reid. Thanks very much to both of you for joining us. Brendan, just very, very quickly tell us what Spiked Online is for people who aren't familiar.
Spiked Online is a daily magazine that takes a kind of radical, humanist, libertarian perspective on issues.
Right. So with that in mind, answer the question, is this a political witch hunt?
I think it's becoming one, yes. I think there is has been a severe overreaction to this dinner. I think there's a real stiff middle class moralism that is taking over public life in Britain, where we have people making a national scandal of the fact that a politician tried it on with them, where people are treating, flirtation as harassment. And there's this real bizarre kind of almost sex-phobic attitude taking grip. And I think you can really see that in relation to this event, which strikes me as a fairly typical rich businessman event at which young women were employed to do certain things. And that's what happens. That is part of that world. I don't think it's particularly bad. I don't think it's particularly evil. And I think the mob-like reaction to it is probably far more destructive of public life and also women's freedom, their freedom to choose to do this kind of work, than the event itself was.
Rebecca, stiff middle-class moralism, treating flirtation as harassment, sex-phobic, a mob-like reaction. Is that fair?
I mean, I find it really difficult to marry together this idea that not wanting young women to get groped as they go about their work is conservatism. I am the most sex-positive person you'll ever meet. I write about sex for a living. My God, the things I've experienced and experimented with for the sake of journalism would make your hair curl. However, I still expect women to be able to get on with their jobs without having the experience of people groping them or harassing them. And I think it's very easy to take this very high-minded, very theoretical approach to this when you haven't been on the receiving end of it. But as a young woman, I know what it's like. I know the feeling of somebody sticking their hand up your skirt when you're working as a barmaid or as a waitress. And it's a really horrible one. I fully believe that women should be able to go and get jobs. And, you know, if you want to flirt for tips, absolutely you flirt for tips. But there is a line, and that line is crossed when somebody touches you. I think to call it a witch hunt is relatively ridiculous, because witches are not real and sexual harassment is. But what I will say is that this is starting to turn into virtue signalling, and it's now politicians trying to score points off each other, and they're making a conversation that should be about sexual harassment and the treatment of women into, oh look, we're so good, we fired somebody because we care about women. And I find that really distasteful, because it's not about political point scoring, it's about making life better for women.
I don't think Brendan's going to disagree with that, but she makes a good point, doesn't she, Brendan, that you personally haven't been on the receiving end of this kind of behaviour. You weren't at the event. What gives you, or what puts you in a position to say that these people are being sex-phobic?
Because, you know, we have to accept the fact that there, people in this country have different attitudes to sex and different attitudes to work. And at the moment, what we have is the domination of the public sphere and the domination of the commentariat in particular by one view, which is that all forms of interaction between the sexes are potentially problematic and often veer on the cusp of harassment. And that's a view that not everyone shares, and we have to accept that. You know, I come from a background where the thing that young men and women did when they were 18, 19, 20 was to go to somewhere like Ibiza or some other part of Spain and get drunk and have sex for 10 days in a row on the trot, and they would never have described any of that as harassing or depressing or as rapacious. So there are different attitudes in this country, and that's not been reflected in any of the discussion at the moment. And I'm worried about the way in which, in response to the President's Club, we have these impeccably middle-class feminists who effectively want to save working-class women from choosing careers that they disapprove of. There's a real white savior feminism taking place at the moment. And you can see it where one of these women came forward and said, well, she didn't feel like she had been abused or harassed or treated badly. And you effectively have these incredibly well-educated, often quite plummy feminists saying, well, you were, I'm afraid. That is infantilizing these women. That is treating them like children. And it is saying that they are incapable of choosing for themselves what kind of work they should do.
Rebecca, final question for you. I just want to ask you about Lord Mendelssohn, who we said at the beginning there has been effectively sacked from his front bench role. You know, he says he was there as in his role as president of a charity that received support from the event. And he says he didn't witness any sexual misconduct. Should he be sacked?
I mean, no, I don't think he should be sacked. I think he should join the discussion about what really happened, because what Brendan's just illustrated is that nobody seems to really know. I think we have a bit of a fake news problem going here. I say that I've read accounts of people being harassed and molested. Brendan's claiming that everybody had a high old time and people loved it.
No, I didn't say that.
We need somebody. The implication was that you felt that people were comfortable with it, because and people like me and Sibley Deal.
I've heard the women say that, and I listen.
But I've also
when
working,
heard.
But I've also
when working class women
I
speak. I listen
class
to them.
Women speak. Why? How have you made a presumption about what class I am? How do
because
you?
Because a lot of feminism.
How
is
do
now,
no, you Brendan? Know, how do you get to decide what class I am? How do you get to decide that?
I'm talking about feminism, and I am saying that a lot of feminists use the word mansplaining to describe when a man says something, but a lot of feminism is class-splaining, and it is these very well-educated, very well-connected women who often are telling working-class women who do page three or who work in lap dancing clubs or who work at events like this that they are effectively have internalized misogyny, that they've been brainwashed, that they don't know what's in their own interest.
But I've worked extensively with sex workers. I have a huge amount of experience of working with people who work in sex work and people who work in these industries. Just because a woman is working class doesn't mean that she deserves to get groped when she goes to work. And
no
you seem to be suggesting that.
That
you seem no to be suggesting that working class women are these happy little cockneys who just get on with getting groped because they're just happy to earn a penny to buy
this
some
is,
skin. That
what, so this is how. This is what I mean by middle-class patronizing feminism, this interpretation of anyone who defends the agency of working-class women. They are instantly insulted because the agency of working-class women is simply something that modern-day feminists do not believe in. And they demonstrate that again and again.
Every right. Working-class women are going to get pushed
You don't believe
off.
That they have agency.
I believe that all women have agency. However, I believe that if you're going to get touched up by someone old and gross, you might as well get paid properly for it, not a rubbish waitressing salary.
Right, so they're rubbish.
These women weren't making
their jobs are so much more rubbish.
They were making a joke.
Yes.
Joke
their jobs are
wine.
So much more rubbish than yours. We get the message.
A lot of very, very difficult issues and subjects kind of get drawn into this debate, don't they? I really appreciate your time, and I think the important thing is, and this is something that is very topical at the moment, is that we should all be allowed our views, and I'm very, very grateful to both of you for taking the time to speak to us here and debate the issue on the LBC Daily Debrief. That was the editor of Spiked Online, Brendan O'Neill, and the Feminist and Telegraph columnist, Rebecca Reid. Thanks very much to both of you. And that is your LBC Daily Debrief for today. I'm Richard Suchet, and it's the weekend. What a relief. What a way to end it as well. We'll be back on Monday to give you the full story on the day's biggest news. In the meantime, why not spare 5 minutes to hit subscribe and leave us a very generous review? But of course, whilst we may be off for the weekend, the news doesn't stop with this podcast. Make sure you listen to LBC on digital radio, FM in London, or online at lbc.co.uk. Have a good weekend, and I'll see you on Monday.